Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar.
And Sour Humanoid!
When I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested, and all thumbs up.
Hello, my love. It is I, Tawny. I love you and I miss you dearly. And we have a friend today.
We do. We're very excited. Today we have a special guest, Celeste Yvonne. And Celeste is the author of the book, It's Not About the Wine, The Loaded Truth About Mommy Wine Culture. We want to talk all about the book. And we'll have links to everything in here. And Celeste is a certified sober coach with over 20 years of experience in as a communications professional in corporate America, which I know we can all, or many of us, can relate to the idea of the culture in corporate America and how that impacts. And her writing has been featured in the Washington Post, Good Morning America. She writes for the Wall Street Journal and many others. And Celeste is founding host of the Sober Mom Squad and advocates. Many of you would know the podcast. Well, again, all the links we'll have for Sober Mom Squad and advocates for mothers who struggle with addiction and mental health. Welcome, Celeste.
Hey, Lisa. Hey, Tawny. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Hello, my love. It's so good to see your face.
Yeah.
I know. Look at, I don't think I've talked to either of you in person before, but it feels right. It feels like it was destined to be for a long time now.
Well, you know, speaking of in person, I finally met Emily Lynn Paulson in person yesterday. We've been another sober mom, who has written wonderful books. I met Lisa on Instagram, Emily, you, we've all met on Instagram. And this is just how it is, huh?
I know. She sent me the picture yesterday. I had some serious FOMO.
Are you coming to New York at all?
I did too.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. No, it's like, where are we? I'll be in New York in October. My brother lives in Jersey City. So I will be there just hanging with him. But I'd love to connect.
Yeah, well, we will meet up and we will hug IRL and then give Emily some FOMO and then give Lisa even more FOMO.
And me again. Now even more because now I've been on face-to-face with Celeste.
Yes.
So Celeste, tell us all about your book. Tell us all about what's going on. I know our audience is going to be very into hearing about it.
Yeah, so I've been working on this book for years, but it's amazing how much it has changed over the years. When I was first working with an agent and I was putting a book proposal together, it was a completely different book. It was going to be a book about this one-year journey I went on to be a better mother. And every month I did something different. One month I focused on mindfulness. Another month I focused on eating better. Another month I focused on exercising. And I had compiled all this year's worth of data to create this book. And then, a total side note, at the very end of that experiment, I quit drinking in the last month. And the irony of it all is here I was trying to be the ultimate mom, but what I really needed to do at the end of the day was quit drinking. So when my agent saw my post that I told to my followers that I am 1 year sober and this has changed my life and I never see myself drinking again, she called me and she's like, we're going to have to put the other book aside because this is the book. Like, this is the book. And we just went headfirst into this idea. And then the pandemic hit. And then the book changed again. And I feel like every single thing that's happened, happened for a reason, because it got me to this place where even the book's title, like realizing the problems we're facing, the reason why moms are drinking more than ever, the reason why we feel like we have nothing else for us at the end of the night except alcohol or drugs, is it's not about the wine at all. It's about these bigger problems that we are seeing, the way mothers just are so undersupported, so undervalued. There are so many things that led us here to this place where we make jokes on the internet about needing wine to cope. And it's bigger than just the wine itself.
I mean, that is, Lisa and I are not parents, but that is incredibly relatable of the, you know, the mental load, the societal expectations of women, all of these, you know, all of these things that the three of us talk about that led us to self-medicating with alcohol. It's not about the alcohol. It's like the alcohol really is just a symptom of a much larger cultural problem.
Yeah. And I think we're seeing it a lot in the articles that are coming out showing that the stats for women's drinking are on the rise. High-risk drinking is on the rise. Alcohol-related deaths are on the rise. And some of the issue does come with the fact that people are either not having children or having children later in life, and they are developing this independent lifestyle. And it, then for me, you know, I had my first child at 35. Then when it all came crashing down on me, and this idea of now I've got little kids, my independent life felt like it was over as I knew it, because it kind of was. And I felt like everything I had worked so hard for in the corporate world, in my family and friends, just went out the window. And all of a sudden, my only value to contribute to society was in raising little children. And it felt like I had disappeared. Like, it felt like I no longer existed just as an individual. Now I was a parent of important people in the world. And I drank at that. You know, there was a lot of anger and rage at that feeling that I don't matter anymore. And I absolutely drank at that.
That what you just said really stood out to me. You said you drank at it. Can you elaborate on that a little more? That I really like that phrasing.
Yeah, I think it is so easy, especially as women, growing up in the day and time I grew up in, where the thought was to be seen, not heard. Women should be small and skinny and keep quiet. You know, all these things, alcohol helped me solve in some ways. Like, alcohol helped me stay small. Alcohol helped me stay quiet. I'm not causing a problem when I'm quiet and drunk in a corner. You know, it was when it was really easy for me to numb out the anger and rage using alcohol instead of feeling it. And I did that for years. And once I did quit drinking, some of that rage did come to the surface. And that's when I started demanding more changes at home, at work, making lifestyle changes that I probably never would have done if I was still drinking. Because as you guys know, alcohol forces you to, or quitting alcohol forces you to feel the feelings.
That's real.
Absolutely.
Feeling the feelings that we drank to not feel. And that can be incredibly overwhelming when you're dealing with corporate pressures, being a woman, being a mom, just being a human.
Absolutely.
Being a human with a multitude of roles.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think using alcohol or drugs as a crutch at the end of the night, I think the reason it is so common is because we're so limited on what else we can do. Like, if we get loud, if we get vocal, if we demand changes, we're called a nag or a C word, or All these things were bossy, you know, all these things that women get called when they are vocal. And I think that's why alcohol is such a well-used tool, because it does. It keeps us quiet.
Yeah.
It's easy. Well, alcohol is just easy. It's accessible. Like, you can just drink it and you feel different within minutes.
Well, I was going to say too, it's sort of when you talk about mommy wine culture, it's, you know, so acceptable. It's an acceptable way, and it's almost encouraged. Like, let's bond over this stuff, over drinks. And it makes it easy, I think, the normalizing of it. And, you know, that goes to everything with, like, you know, when we see stuff in stores, you know, about mommy juice and all that kind of stuff, that there's not a real questioning of, you know, why is this so encouraged? Like, what is it adding? You know, it ends up taking away so much.
Women are a easy to target market, because we do feel like we're in this position. I think, you know, if anything, the pandemic showed us just how unvaluable our society considers mothers, and how, when it comes to support and helping lift people up, mothers didn't get any of that except from the alcohol industry. It seemed like the only people who showed any empathy for mothers during the pandemic was the alcohol industry. And, you know, they're smart. They played us quite well, because when you do feel like nobody else seems to even notice you exist or care that you're here, it does feel nice to be acknowledged. I think the reason mommy wine culture has worked so well with our society is because it does make us feel like we're being seen, even if it's for the wrong reasons or the wrong intention. But motherhood is hard, and nobody else seems to give us that credit except the alcohol industry.
I remember I remember walking into, it must have been like the back to school of 2021, like going into the end of 2020, going into 2021. And there was a big box store that had a big sign, back to school supplies. And it was on a pile of cases of wine. Mm-hmm. Mm. And I remember just thinking, like, yeah. And, you know, I don't have kids, but thinking, I can't imagine how it must be for moms, and moms who work, and moms who, you know, just aren't getting any kind of support in that environment.
And during COVID, that was, I mean, if you looked on social media, if anybody could see for themselves, that was the solution we were being given. Yeah. Oh, your kids have been sent home from school, homeschooling supplies, get them in the wine aisle, you know, the quarantinis, pandemic punch, you know, drink yourself into being a good homeschooling mama. It was relentless. And we see the stats that show rise in drinking during coronavirus. Well, yeah, of course there was. How could there not be? That was the only solution we were being told.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you, how would you spot, or what signs do you see in people who, you know, are getting to the point where they're relying on it so much as a crutch, and, you know, they really need to take a hard look at, you know, whether or not something has to change?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we're not talking about somebody who has an occasional glass of wine here, right? It's really when you are using it to self-medicate, like I was, where it becomes something you depend on because it's the only relief you get during the day. And that is so hard to even say right now as a mom of, you know, I got a 7 and 9-year-old, and I feel like I'm having this moment today where I'm like, I have nothing at the end of the day. I have no relief. This is daunting. This is endless. There is very little satisfaction in kind of the day-to-day monotony of raising kids sometimes. So to not have that thing to take the edge off, it's not a fun thing to think about. You know, it's not a fun thing to feel, to know that at the end of the day, it's all on you. There's no relief in sight. But, you know, I think the key here is when you kind of put alcohol away and stop relying on external things as a crutch, you do make internal changes. So it doesn't feel as daunting. And for, I think mothers, that's going to look like setting better boundaries, lowering the expectations of the extracurriculars for your kids, what the schedule is going to look like. It's going to look like a redistribution of labor on the home front. If you have a partner who's also helping with the kids, or in addition to taking care of the kids, it's making those changes at the root so you don't feel so desperate for some sort of crutch at the end of the night.
That reminds me of some of the research that I did for my book, is like, it's really helping people replace liquid courage with what I call intrinsic courage. It's, you know, people think that they need alcohol to, whether it's take the edge off, or for the context of my book, it's to feel better on a date, feel more confident in the bedroom, have an uncomfortable conversation with your partner. It's really helping people figure out that you already have that confidence within you. You have that real courage within you, and you don't need this external substance to do that. And it sounds like you're saying a very similar thing. It's like, there is no direct one-to-one replacement for having a glass of wine at the end of the day. Like, that's just how it is. So what you're saying is really lowering your expectations, giving yourself some grace, asking for help, asking for, you know, your community. Like, they say it takes a village, like really reaching out to your village and saying, I need help with my kids. I need help with taking them to soccer practice. I need help with unwinding at the end of the day. Like, is that's what I'm getting from what you're saying. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think hustle culture, I think this, you can do it all and make it look easy mindset that we put on each other as moms, that feeds so much into this problem. And when you kind of reset the expectations of what makes a good mother and realize it doesn't matter how many extracurriculars your kids has, it doesn't matter what you guys are doing on the weekends. It's about mental health. It's about taking care of yourselves. It's about putting your oxygen mask on first, you know, all the things. But that at the end of the day is what's going to help you sustain through these bigger challenges of that life happens. It's going to happen to all of us, where you don't need the crutch every night. I mean, that's the key, because when you keep living to these impossible parenting standards that I think we've really set on each other, then yeah, at the end of the night, you're going to be in a place where you're drained, you're burnt out, you're feeling all the things. So the goal is to not to get to that place at all.
And is that what led you to create and be involved in all of these sober mom activities and resources that you're involved in now?
When the pandemic hit, you know, I was on sober Instagram I was a couple of years sober at that point, and we saw what was happening. You know, you could see on social media the jokes about needing wine to homeschool. Everyone probably knew somebody who had relapsed during that time. And we were starting to see the stats and the data show that this was genuinely happening, because recovery meetings, they stopped overnight. And yet, you know, alcohol stores remain open. Not only that, but they were expanding their services. They were now offering delivery and drive-through options. So when we saw—
And takeout, you could add beer and liquor to, like, if you're ordering something from Postmates or Seamless, like, you can have liquor delivered.
Yeah. So, I mean, alcohol, if anything, ramped up during that time while recovery went to a standstill. And so when Emily Paulson kind of put this post out saying, hey, does anybody want to do anything about this and support mothers in recovery? I was like, oh my God, yes. let me help. And we started Sober Mom Squad meetings probably at the end of March, weekly meetings free to anyone who identifies as a mother and is
March of 2020.
Yeah.
So like right in the thick of it. Okay.
Right when everything started, right when we heard the news that our kids were now going to be homeschooled, you know, it just felt like the rug was being swept out from under us, in so many ways. And, we started having these weekly meetings and we still have them. Like 3 years later, I still lead the Wednesday 10 a.m. Pacific meeting. And, it's fascinating to kind of see the evolution of these meetings, but also so much has still remained the same. A lot of these women who are now in their early recovery really saw themselves kind of bottom out during the pandemic. It was just the worst of times in so many ways. And now, you know, they're ready to kind of get a hold of their lives. But it's been a fascinating journey. And for me, it's been just as important for my own recovery as anybody else's. It's what drove me to want to get my recovery coaching certificate. It's what's motivated me to want to mentor. I mean, there's just so many parts of my own recovery that has grown through this process. I didn't have a recovery community when I quit drinking. I did it all myself. I thought that this is my problem to bear and this is my problem to solve. And it's probably my greatest regret in early recovery is not finding a community.
I relate to that. I mean, I did it on my own until I found a therapist at 9 months sober. And that was when I really began the community element of it. And it was also because my approach to sobriety, we didn't have the word sober curious yet, but that's what I was. And so right. I didn't want to go to an AA meeting because I was like, I'm not an alcoholic. I didn't know what an AA meeting offered I had an idea of what it offered, you know? And so I really was white knuckling it those first 9 months. And I completely agree. I wish I would have given myself the gift of peer support or at least starting therapy sooner.
Yeah. And I always tell people like, there's no better time to be sober curious or sober than right now. I mean, just the changes I've seen in the last 5 years are so transformative. Even the vocabulary, sober curious, gray area drinking, dry July. I mean, these things are newer, but they are normalizing these conversations. And there's nothing cooler than going to a restaurant that I've recently been at and seen they've now added a mocktail option. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that is so awesome. And we get to be part of it. I mean, we are part of this sober movement. And I love it because we are seeing the change before our eyes.
It really is. It really is remarkable. And when I've been talking to law firms and I see what's, you know, they were facilitating through the pandemic so much, like they would send like cocktail, like margarita mix home to people's houses so that they could bond and have Zoom happy hour together, making their own, you know, margaritas and things like that. And it has changed so much because we started talking about coming back from the pandemic, how it gave us an opportunity for a reset. Right. Everything had been, you know, you want people, they're bringing people back into the office and everything was always boozy. And now you had you haven't had in-person events in 2 years. You get to start from scratch. And a lot of them are embracing it. But the thing that doesn't change, and then that I think is, you know, in the corporate world, a lot of what, you know, leads to drinking for stress relief as a crutch is just the exhausting schedule routine, like that is not the expectation that, you know, well, you're still going to do it all and we're going to add a little more.
Yeah. It's pretty parallel to motherhood. Corporate drinking culture is its own animal, right? Yeah. And when you have kind of that hustle mindset, like we expect you to be in work mode from 8 until 8. And we're going to help you through it with, you know, some liquid courage or whatever you want to call it. It never ends well. You know, I've 20 years in corporate America. I absolutely had my fair share of horrible experiences when alcohol is involved in a work environment. And I hope, and one thing, you know, I push for in my book is having a better sober, curious mindset when it comes to corporate culture and how to handle that if you're in early sobriety and you live in a toxic drinking work environment, what you can advocate for and what you can expect and how not to fall down that rabbit hole. Because I think for my own experience, as a woman trying to break glass ceilings in the corporate world, the best opportunity I thought I had was going head to head with the men on drinks at the steakhouse, right?
Yep, exact same for me.
And that, you know, doesn't necessarily end well. And yet it felt like there was no other way to do that or to be taken seriously. So how do we make those changes where we can still have the same experiences, where we can still rise the ladder, the corporate world, without putting ourselves in a dangerous situation, without putting ourselves where we're drinking more than is healthy or safe?
You know, where I saw it a ton was actually before the pandemic, because I was talking about this stuff in the corporate culture before the pandemic too. And I was like, it starts at the top. Like, you can expect people, new associates, mid-level senior associates, whatever, at a law firm to be creating the change. Like, you have to have a corporate culture where that is supported. And that means for team leaders, and I have them trained in leadership. And the idea that you go to the bar to bond, because that's how I got good work at my law firm when I was a first year associate. I hung out and went drink for drink with these guys. I got to know partners. They wanted to work with me because I was fun. Mm-hmm. And so the notion that, and now I do feel like the younger generation is more empowered to do this. When somebody comes by, the partner comes by at 8 o'clock at night and is like, hey, we're going to run out to the bar. You're going to come, to be able to say, no, you know, I can't, you know, no, I'm not going to join you tonight, but thanks for the invitation. But for that partner to then make a note, realize what you're doing. This person now, can you go take them to coffee during the week? Can you do something that gives them an opportunity to get that time? And, you know, I encourage law students and younger lawyers to do that, to say, hey, hope last night was fun. Can we grab a cup of coffee this week? But that shouldn't be the expectation that it's on them. It should be that the people that are running things have the self-awareness to realize what they're doing and make sure that gets the opportunity gets spread, not just around to those who drink.
Well, and if you look at the research, it doesn't show good things happening when there is alcohol involved in the workplace.
Oh, I was just going to say, when it really started happening was Me Too. When Me Too happened and law firms saw the risk of what happens when you're mixing so much alcohol in the workplace, that's when they started to put the brakes on stuff. But it took that.
Yeah. And hopefully it has changed for the better since then. I have seen it personally change for the better, where events aren't quite so centered around alcohol, and we're getting there. But I do think, you know, HR can get involved, working on a more inclusion and equity, including around people who don't drink, not making events centered around alcohol or a bar setting, making things that are less in that type of setting is going to be, not only is it going to benefit your work culture and build stronger, more meaningful workplace relationships, but you're less likely to have the adverse effects that come with drinking and heavy drinking when there are people in the workplace involved.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's also, before we pivot to the music minute, it's also, this conversation is reminding me of how we're also seeing just more mindfulness in the workplace in general. We're seeing meditation teachers come in for a meditation break during the day, and yoga, and like having green juice pop-ups in the workplace, as opposed to, you know, even like I'm seeing less coffee and more emphasis on, like, it's really interesting to see how we are moving more towards mindfulness in the corporate space. It's not, we're still pretty far from where we need to be, but I'm seeing a shift. Like, I know I have a lot of friends that are yoga teachers that are just like, they're booked going to all these corporate yoga and meditation events and retreats, and like, good for you.
I love that. And mental health too. A lot of advocacy for helping workers and employees have access to mental health tools.
And then, so you critical. Know, mental health days in addition to sick days, and letting people know it's okay to use your sick days for a mental health day. It's the same thing. And I think the more open we are about that, the less stigma that there is. If you don't feel well, that doesn't have to mean that you have a cold. Like, you literally, if you don't feel well because you're depressed, you can use a sick day.
Absolutely.
I love that.
So Celeste, you're on Recovery Rocks, where we talk about recovery and rock and roll. We've talked about the recovery part. Are there any songs that maybe got you through those early days of sobriety, or even a song that you're kind of obsessed with right now?
That's funny. I was just, I'm on like the Peloton Sober Facebook group. And somebody
that
was
is
just
so specific. I love it.
Yes. Highly specific support group.
I know. And it's awesome. I'm on just random Facebook groups, and that's one. And somebody was just talking about this morning how, you know, this isn't necessarily rock and roll, but how Taylor Swift, some of her songs really speak to her recovery. And she was talking about Anti-Hero, but I chimed in there because This Is Me Trying is like one of my favorite songs about recovery ever. And like, it gets me every time. So when I think about favorite recovery songs, that's definitely one of them.
That's a really good one. And you're right. Anti-Hero is also a recovery anthem in a way. It's like, it's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. Like, I had to fix my shit. It was not, I tried to blame everyone else and other situations and other people, places, and things, but it was me, you know?
And if you watch her video, there's like two Taylors, and one of them, you know, kind of is scolding her and giving her a hard time about everything, her weight, what she's dressing as, her ego. And that feels like a lot like recovery too. If you had, like I did, a wine witch that always was sitting on your shoulder telling you everything you were doing wrong.
Well, and Taylor's been very open about, she's in recovery from an eating disorder, and it's the same stuff that we're talking about. It's just a different behavior. So
yeah.
I love that. I love that you brought in Taylor Swift. Celeste, we're going to have links to everything in the show notes, but can you just remind our listeners the name of your book and how they can reach out to you? Maybe if they want to join one of your Wednesday night peer support groups.
Yeah. So my book is called It's Not About the Wine, The Loaded Truth Behind Mommy Wine Culture. That is available everywhere books are sold. You can find me on social media. My handle is The Ultimate Mom Challenge. And I lead free sober meetings for anyone who identifies as a mom with Sober Mom Squad on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific.
Hell yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Celeste.
Thank you, Celeste.
Thank you both.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for joining us, and listeners, thank you for listening, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, Sobriety Party, sobrietyeaparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.